Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod once again. 4 weeks to go of regular season round robin play in Super Rugby, and it's the big one this weekend coming up. The Blues versus the Canes, number one v number two. Big game to see how the season is going to end up. We're going to get into that big time during the show today. We'll talk, of course, about the Crusaders and their ups and downs. The Highlanders got themselves into seventh spot. The Chiefs on their way back up the table, looking pretty good as well. So plenty to talk about. But before we get to any of that, we've got a special guest in with us today from New Zealand Rugby, Mike Anthony from the High Performance Unit. He's been with the All Blacks, with the Sevens teams, with the Crusaders, with Canterbury, through a bunch of teams. He's a bit of a guru of high performance. And we're going to talk a little bit about pathways in New Zealand, about development of players and what that looks like and how we go about keeping up and beating the rest of the world through that system. Mike, thank you very much for joining us. Of course, to your left, James Parsons, who you know fairly well, I'm sure, that has bugged you over time with his relentless pursuit of high performance.
Very driven.
Spent plenty of time together, Motsi and I. Okay.
Now, before we get going, let's start at the very start. What does a head of high performance at New Zealand Rugby actually do?
Yeah, great question, and kia ora, thanks for having me. So my role is now in the men's space, so Hannah Porter does the women's space. Given the growth of the women's game, we've split the role, which is nice. It just allows me to focus in on the men's space. Essentially, or simply put, it's support our teams in black to win on the world stage. And so my remit over the last wee while in particular has been Olympic preparation of our All Black Seven. So obviously fantastic result last night to go back-to-back with Singapore. And then with the All Blacks, the transition period, supporting Razor to, you know, around recruitment and management and make sure that team's set up ready to go for England, which, you know, is coming around really quick. Outside of that, more broadly, coach development, player development, match officials, but obviously got the people within my team who are got the expertise to lead those programs.
How do you get there? How do you end up being a high performance director, head of high performance, sorry, whatever.
Yeah.
How do you end up there?
So I've been probably in the game now 25, 26 years. So started in strength and conditioning. That's where I met fine athlete on my left.
He's good too, isn't he?
He's great. spends a bit of time on it. I started as strength and conditioning coach. So when the game went professional in 96, I went on board with the Crusaders, had 8 or 10 years with them. And then when Smithy became head coach of the All Blacks, I went into the All Black program. Then 5 years in Europe. And then sort of was thinking about what next. I wanted a change, an opportunity to come back to New Zealand rugby in the last sort of 16 years. So sort of sports science, then player development, and now into head of high performance. So, you know, a lot of time in and around the game and sort of transitioned through a number of roles. So both coalface with teams and understanding, you know, what teams need to perform, and then more on that administrative side in the last period.
With I suppose, if you look at international rugby, if we use the All Blacks as an example, just how much there's probably been an evolution in the game, and the North maybe have just been ahead of the curve, where I suppose New Zealand rugby and probably the Southern Hemisphere have been used to being that head of the curve. What is the balance between acknowledging that and adjusting, or backing the athlete or the I suppose the type of athlete we have here to suit our game?
Yeah, there's a couple of things, I think, Chip. The first one is, in the last wee while, we're constantly wanting to evolve and innovate. I think, you know, if you think about Kiwis, we're pioneers and we're always looking to either do things differently or in our, the language we use is lead the way the game's played. You're right, of late, Europe have done that really well and what they've done. I think the other challenge for us is making sure that we've got players who can handle and adapt to different styles of play. And certainly with South Africa now not in Super Rugby, that's been more challenging for us. So part of the reason we stood up All Blacks 15 was to allow us to give players exposure to Northern Hemisphere styles. We missed 20s for a period with COVID and so on, and that's back on radar. And having the TRC, which is running currently, fantastic for those players to get exposure to. You know, you've seen it, that physicality around set piece, line speed, those sort of things that we don't necessarily get in our game. So while Super's fantastic, it's fast, and we've seen that from the stats, it's you often get, how do we set our players up for success when they go onto the international stage?
If you look at the 20s, we had Jared Hoyata on the other day, and seriously impressive in the way he's just very matter-of-fact of the style they want to play, but also having that ability to adapt. And the weather conditions probably didn't, you'd think it would have suited the South African side, but it must have been pleasing to see that growth and probably, for the most part, I know that they didn't win the game, they drew it, but for the most part, they dominated that fixture, which is probably what we haven't seen in that 20s age group for a while.
Yeah, it's spot on. And look, it's interesting because it's a balance between development and winning. And, you know, 20s, very early on, I think we won four back-to-back, and there was an expectation this team's going to keep on winning, and other teams have got their programs organised, and we've won a couple along the way, but certainly haven't performed to where we expect any team in a black jersey. Yeah, really pleased the other night, and personally I thought on a dry track we would have had them in a lot of trouble. I thought our back three played really well. Line out was a little dysfunctional, but you know, it's early days and scrum held up. So yeah, look, the weather forecast, I talked to Matt Sexton, the weather forecast isn't great on the Sunshine Coast. So and the pitch cut up in that second game. Argentina are a really big side,
good,
really physical. So look, that's what we need before we go away. We've got France in our pool again. We know what we're going to get with them, so it's a perfect dress rehearsal.
Not to harp on about the 20s, but we've been asked a lot around sort of the French system. They're almost fully professional. You know, like they've got so many tiers of their club sides that these players that are playing 20s are constantly... There is a fine balance between looking after the human and developing athlete. Do you still feel that's the case down here?
Definitely. I think that holistic approach is really important. We want to get the off-field right. You know, the French 20s, fantastic success over the last number of years. And for example, the way they do it, that when the French senior team are in, the 20s are in and often train against them, and they've had great success. We've got to look at what's right for us and get that balance right. And some of that's through the international development contracts with players immersed in the Super Rugby environments. It's through our Super Rugby under 20 competition. But the challenge is, how do you get those players ready to adapt to different styles? So, you know, I went with Jace Ryan and Leon to the under 20s tournament in Taupo, and you watch our guys won't kick. There's a lot of kick space, but they want to play.
Yeah.
So it's just that ability to have an adaptable game plan. So if you're up against line speed, how do you deal with that?
How early do you start that? I mean, can you take that down to schoolboy level, or when do you want to start embedding these things?
Yeah, look, we, certainly the schools run their own space, and while we have some input into some of the sort of the identified talent and bring them into under-18s camp or New Zealand schools programs and so on, and it's just really a small touch point. It's probably once they, as they leave school, is really when we start to invest more time and energy into them, and certainly the national development contracts, which were formerly an interim training contract, have been fantastic in that you get the young players training alongside All Blacks and Super Rugby players, and they, you know, they see the professional habits that are needed. They understand how to review and preview a game, and it's a lot of that. It's easy to get on the field and train and sweat in the gym, but a lot of those habits off the field that Jip's talking about to get that more well-rounded athlete, really important.
So from that point of view, the under-20s is really a stepping stone. I mean, the need to win that competition maybe isn't as big as the need to develop the players over a period of time. You know, people aren't going to lose their jobs based on New Zealand under-20s not winning the World under-20s because it's leading to somewhere bigger?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of interesting research around the success, and this is across sport, not just in rugby, success in junior world champs doesn't translate across multiple sports to success, you know, with their senior teams. However, any team in black, our expectation, we want to perform well and we want to win. And, you know, it's talked about, do we, you know, the impact of 20s, what does that do to the aura around the black jersey for the All Blacks? So certainly our mindset, and with Jono and the coaches now, they're going in to win every test match, which we know is the expectation around the All Blacks. And that'll be the expectation of Razor in test one, you know, that we have to win every test match, although the eye is also very much on the longer term, the, you know, 27 World Cup.
When I think about, I suppose, the under-20s, I think about talent identification and then playing style, I suppose. So we've talked about the playing style and the development. What about the talent identification side of things? Because some people develop early, some people develop late. How early do you start identifying whether a person really could be a big star in, you know, their 20s?
Yeah, so we, again, around that school space, we start to have a little bit of an eye for it, and PJ Williams, who is our TID manager in our team, he'll work with the provincial unions and the Super Rugby clubs, and they've got a network that they run, and they'll look at players and identify from there. The other piece that we're doing is from the top, from the All Blacks, we want to get a really good understanding. We've got good alignment with Razor and so on around the profile of the player that they want. And the great thing about this group, the All Black group coaching now, is that they've all been part of that pathway program, whether it be 20s or Jace Holland, for example, coach schools. So they understand sort of the athlete that's coming through. We get to build a profile around a player. But I think the key thing also is being open to some late developers. So we've got to have multiple entry points to the program. So it's not a linear pathway by any means. And, it, you know, for any young player out there, if you don't make New Zealand schools or under-20s, it's not the end of the world. The beauty of our domestic comps with NPC and so on, you know, players can come on, and as long as they perform well and perform consistently well, they're going to get picked somewhere along the way.
Is there a focus on finding those people who might be a 23-year-old, 24-year-old who eventually breaks out in the NPC? Do you just have to wait for them to arrive, or can you go out and find them, you know, maybe they weren't as big when they're at school or whatever it might be? How do you identify?
Yeah, look, I think it's probably our biggest challenge at the moment, and a lot of the talks about the drop-off in numbers, and, you know, basketball and other sports are really doing well now around that. But for me, I think we know our talent pool around that age group, and it's well supported, and we know that our top end guys, once they become pros, I think often it's those slow burn, might be around positions like type five who take longer physically to mature, and it's just tough. You need resilience in those positions. So that middle tier, once that's sort of 21 to 23 or 4, can become really important for us in time. So that's where NPC and so on, where they can get good playing opportunity and keep playing regularly and supported by a program, is really important.
And I think you guys have done a good job around that national development contract being open and available to a slow burn, especially in the type five, whereas, you know, most guys in there are sort of 18, 19, preparing for 20s, but a lot of the type five members are that sort of 21, 22, 23, that sort of it's like a touch point to go, okay, this is professional rugby, and then if you perform well on NPC, they're not coming in blind. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been a good development, especially because type five are always going to, probably the best example is Kale Tuinokoafi. Like, he's a complete slow burn, but so efficient when he got to that international level. So there are mechanisms in place where trying to catch that, but then there's an element of trust and the PU and I suppose the super system to capture these guys and identify them as well.
I think the other position is around 9 and 10. You know, we identify these guys really early and they'll play at a 20s World Cup and perform well, and then we throw them into super, and then we get, you know, frustrated when they can't run a game. Well, asking a 19-year-old to run a game at that level is tough. So, they're probably another position where we've just got to give them some time, and they've got to be in there and learn. You know, often they get bumped around, pushed to fullback, etc. But they've just got to have time in the saddle to develop their game and understanding and comms and all the parts that come with that.
And to some degree, understanding what is actually their position. I mean, Ruben Love's probably a good example right now of what you're talking about. These guys, where should they play? You know, Geordie Barrett, He's been so much a fullback, now he's 12, having been a 12 before. Like, what is the process there about certain coaches identifying where a player could end up in comparison to where they are now?
Yeah, look, I think the key to that is that there's some alignment. You don't want mixed messages. In Geordie, again, it was what was right for the All Blacks at that time, and it was back three, but then in time, Canes had obviously played him in the midfield. Ruben's a great example, incredible athlete, you know, aerially strong, pace, loves to counter. So you look at where's best for him right now, and with Will out and so on, I think, you know, it gives us great cover. That's the beauty of a lot of our players, the ability to move between positions.
You know, it's a brutal sport, professional sport. You get one opportunity. And I always like the way they say it in the NFL is, if you're the number one draft pick, you shouldn't be going to start as a quarterback. If they get to sit for a year or two behind someone and then they get their opportunity, that's when those are normally the Patrick Mahomes, the Tom Brady's that don't get rushed in. The ones that get rushed in, they're normally, unfortunately, fold. So that you bang on is that 9 and 10 is so crucial to balance.
If we trust that we've seen enough and that they're good enough, we've just got to give them that time. And I like Chip's point around that mentorship's really important. That's why we set up the NDCs, you know, working alongside. And I think about, you know, when Sonny came back into the All Black frame and around it, what was fantastic was his habits off the field, and he had a little group who would just, you know, from nutrition to his recovery and all those things, they, you know, he'll grab some players and do that. And there's no better way than to see the best do those things.
We talked a lot about stats on the show because Chip loves a stat, Bren loves a stat. I'm sure you'll love a stat. Now, one of the things that we've had through in the last week is some stats on the speeding up of the game. I know this is controversial. The YouTube comment section always lights up. Northern Hemisphere people are always like, you Southern Hemisphere people are always trying to change the game. There's nothing wrong with the game. There's nothing wrong with the speed of the game and all those kind of things. But people have got to watch. When you hear those kind of debates about changing rugby and what we're doing down here and how Super Rugby making alterations might not necessarily prepare New Zealand teams for the international rules that are different, from a high-performance perspective, how do you see that argument?
Yeah, look, there's definitely a balance. Ultimately, we've got to have a game that our fans enjoy. And as evidenced by the broadcast numbers that have come out, that the changes we've made to the game, and whether it's just that or the evenness of the competition and so on, but regardless, it's really positive for the game. I'd like to acknowledge the work done. We've got really good alignment between our players, our coaches and our match officials around this, and that's allowed us to be able to adapt and be really open to innovation. And yeah, look, the North will always look at anything that we suggest is going to be to benefit us. And I think to your point, we've got to make sure we manage, you know, if we've got Super Rugby played a certain way, how do we ensure that we are able to transition our All Blacks if the game looks a little bit different internationally? But look, certainly we're wrapped with where we've got to with speeding. Well, it's really the flow of the game, as you touched on. People, there's a bit of a misconception. We talk about ball and play a lot, and there's a lot of teams in the North, ball and play's really high, but doesn't mean they play an expensive game. They're just good at retaining the ball, playing pretty close. For us, it's more about how do we get the stoppages out, get the ball back in, and our teams can play, and you hope an element of fatigue and so on comes into it and opens the game up.
There must be an element of pride, though, because a lot of the trials that have happened over the last 2 to 3 years, World Rugby are now seriously looking at to adopt. You know, you would have been at the shape of the game up in the Northern Hemisphere earlier this year?
I didn't go to that one, Jip, which thankfully it was a lot better than the one we went to. So Joe, Ian, myself went 18 months ago, or almost 2 years ago, and it was tough. But this time round, and off the back of the World Cup, they were certainly open to it. And I think you're seeing now with what's and the openness to consider some of this has been really positive. And, you know, the 20s for the World Cup, and they brought in for TRC some additional laws, and three are being voted on this week as well to consider. Mm-hmm. And I think a good example around the innovation and what's right for the game, 2 weeks before Super Rugby kicked off, I went to our coaches and said, what about the offside law? Shall we consider changing it? And they all bought into it, which was, you know, everyone was moaning about the DuPont law and leaving that chase line in the middle of the field. And it just allows the game to open up and counter-attack, which our teams love, it's allowed that
and
to happen a little bit more.
And you see it's impacted quite a lot in the counter-attack. There's a lot of counter-attack tries, and it's exciting. I mean, it's exciting product. And I do think there is, like, we do have to move with the times a little bit. If we do, and I know it's like, don't compare, I always bring up NRL, but, like, they can change their rules like that. Like, Volandes has an idea, boom, and it seems to have a good impact. And from a marketing point of view, it bringing bums on seats and eyes to our game is the end result at the end of the day, because that's how we inspire the next group of talent.
Well, the other challenge for us that the North don't necessarily have, you watched Europe last night, Champions Cup semi, and Leinster pack 82,000 into Croke Park. Now, I know it's a playoff and it's Europe, but fantastic spectacle, Leinster play a high tempo, physical game as well. So, yeah, look, we're constantly looking at how do we find a game that our fans love, our players love, our coaches love, and I think we're getting a nice balance. And look, our game is tough. Our match officials have done an incredible job, and they've been fantastic in actually making this happen. TMO intervention, post-World Cup was really niggly. I think we're averaging 1.3 per match, which is really low, and that's directed by the referee to come in, and they're shorter, through the foul play review process. It's helped speed that part of the game up and so on. Mm.
So you say that a couple of weeks beforehand you went and had a chat. Is that how these things evolve? Like a light bulb goes off from someone, has a chat with somebody else, and they go, let's get around a table and discuss whether this is good for the game? Is that... what is the process here?
Yeah, that one was pretty unique. Chris Pollock rang me, actually, and I think he'd talked to Clayton and a couple other coaches, and they just talked about it and threw it to me, and I'm like, we're 2 weeks out from the start of Super. Shit, how's everyone going to respond? But really positively, so open to it. Normally the way we do it is we'll do a review at the end of the competition, and last time we did it, and the Australians are part of that because combined comp, and ran a session. I sort of facilitated the session with the group in there and said, here's what we've got currently, what are we thinking, anything new. This year was about consolidating on what we'd done last year, and the only really new one was the offside piece, which we brought in late, and it's been really well received. So yeah, a little bit of, generally we'll come in and go out in advance and do it more formalised. The offside one was pretty unique off the back of, I think if you watch Six Nations, where Gregor came out and bemoaned what they were doing, etc., and we jumped on it.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be setting scrums in your own 22 like the box were to counteract the French standing in the middle of the field, right?
Yeah,
as good a story and as good an innovation as that was from Rutty, it's kind of not the end game. We'd prefer to see a bit of a counter-attack or something else come our way. At least the fans would, in the most part. And that's probably one of the things, when you look at that particular incident, the confusion. I think I can remember Marshy in the commentary on that game going, what on earth is going on here? Why are they doing that? When you've got a game where a 90-test All Black is thinking about that as the game plays out, the expert comments person is having to figure it out. What chance does the casual fan have of figuring that out? So we've got to get to a position where that's just easier to navigate, right?
Yeah, look, our game, Chip used NRL before, and it's quite a simple game, isn't it, from a rule perspective? And that's the trade-off, isn't it? Our game is quite challenging. Some of the stuff we're bringing in now, like 30 seconds for scrum and line-out, that's always been in law, but it's just pushed out because teams want to slow play down, take away momentum. Great, big boys taking me, so you can't have a line-out. So, yeah, look, they're the things that... I think we've got to find a balance. We've got to be careful that we're not innovating every year so that, as you say, the fans, like, or the rugby experts are like, what have we got here? And I think, again, that's the trade-off too between where we're heading with the competition and where the international game will go. But as Jip said, thankfully now, because we've trialled a lot of stuff, it's been successful, World Rugby have got on board and we're seeing closed trials or hopefully some global trials around those.
There's all these things aligning. When you look at a stat sheet, what are you looking for to see whether or not those things have worked? Are there particular elements of the stat sheet? Like back in the day, we used to talk about territory and possession, but those things kind of aren't that relevant anymore. What are you looking for to know that the high-performance objectives from a player's point of view or the quality of the game's concerned? What are you looking for?
Yeah, look, we've gone pretty simplistic early on because of the areas we think... Well, one... we want teams to be willing to have the mindset to attack. And you hear often coaches, particularly international, talk about it's often better to play without the ball. You think about, say, the France All Blacks game where massive kick meters, you know, France really didn't want to play with the ball for a period. And so, you know, our teams, we want them to have the mindset, you know, that, where they can have a crack. And things like 50-22 now, I think we've tried to help with that. And I think teams are getting smarter around how they use that. So the other sort of things we'll look at and go, well, our teams, because it's a big momentum shift in the game. Even things as simple as total game time, and then we look at, you know, the length of the halves and so on. So that's come down significantly, which shows us less stoppages, because the game was getting out, some of them are getting out, you know, 100 minutes or whatever it was, and crazy. So we, the other things, it's so really basic. And then obviously within the game, teams have a lot of stats that they will look at and around areas they think, and a lot of them are pretty consistent. And the match data you get these days on top of all the physical performance data and stuff is significant. But yeah, ours is pretty simplistic around that. And then we'll have some key focus areas. And for us, it's always been about speed and space, and the safety component's always there. And we'll just, that's the stuff we're seeking feedback on. And they've always been a key focus for us around the game.
Mm. Actually, I'm in a meeting on Monday mornings here at Sky, and at that point in time 2 years ago, we were looking at our schedules, you know, and the game wasn't finished by 9:15, it wasn't finished by 9:30, and then suddenly we were rolling over into the next thing, and it was becoming a bit of a problem to figure out how we're going to get from one game to the next, never mind the footy on the field.
Yeah,
it was a real challenge.
Yeah, and look, it is, because then if the game's like that and you think about the profile of the athlete you have, and you know, and teams will manipulate, like South Africa do their bench, but you know, it's an 80-minute game, there should be a fatigue element in it. And at the moment, one of the World Rugby things coming out of shape of the games around a lot of areas being looked at. I'm sitting on a group around number of replacements, so they're considering, you know, what they do around that. It's been talked about for a while. You know, do you have less? Are you only allowed to use a certain amount? How do we bring in fatigue? And there's a trade-off, obviously, because one side will say, well, more fatigue, player safety is an issue, etc. So they're the things that you're constantly, there's a trade-off in there. But we want a game that has fast-flowing and is enjoyable for fans to watch.
I think the one positive out of that, though, is, especially coming from yourself and your position, is as a game, we're listening to fans. Like, that's the exciting thing. It's like we want to re-engage fans so that they can love the sport like we have previously. It's not going to be that. I understand it's not going to be the holy grail, because there's more options. There's more possibilities to be an NBA player these days, because it's happened before once. What's it, old Roger Bannister? When he broke it, everyone broke it, you know? Like, but it takes that one person, so I get that. But the more engagement we can have with fans and make it an entertaining product, and the thought... Like, it is nice, you know, it's nice for our viewers and listeners to understand the amount of time that does go into this and consideration. I think, you know, it's worth noting.
Absolutely. I just want to jump back to the number of subs. What's your point of view on that?
Oh, look, we're pretty, from my view or NZR view, we're a little mixed. Look, coming from an S&C background, part of me's like there should be an element of fatigue in it. We want athletes who have got capacity to last, and there's some, you know, some players, look at TJ Pelinara, you know, 80 minutes, he's a competitor for a long period. You know, our big boys, obviously, there's always going to be some attrition there. Look, we haven't really settled on anything yet. I quite like the idea, do you have a set amount, and then you can only, so you might have eight or whatever on the bench, but you can use a certain number. The challenge with it, our coaches are smart. Whatever we come up with, they'll look at how they manipulate around that. But yeah, we're certainly, what I wouldn't like to see is that we have a game that all of a sudden we've just got these, and some would argue that we have now with the way Africa run their bench, power athletes come on for a short. And
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's like, where do we bring that element of fatigue in and teams being able to outlast and finish over top of teams in the last 20? And that now probably is dictated more by the quality of your bench than your ability to stay in a game.
That's the challenge, isn't it? Like, do you say you're only allowed five forwards on that bench? What do you think, Chip?
Well, I like the idea of preferably you keep the same amount and it becomes a tactical thing.
Yeah.
So if you have a stuff up tactically. The one thing that comes straight to my head, though, is if there's a... You're going to surely... And I suppose you've seen in the NRL now, they've brought it in as if it's a concussion or whatever. It's a free sub. You know, let's not get overcomplicated or... you know, someone snaps their leg, it's like, that's a free sub. Outside of that, I like the idea of that tactical ability, because maybe it's just because the sort of player I was, but, you know, not all of us are gifted athletes, you know, in terms of skill set, pace, speed, but some of us have got, you know, an aerobic base that can go a long distance, and, you know, that last 20 minutes, you know, for some of us is where we can actually do our most damage because we've got the bigger capacity. Mm. So I do like that element, but that is more a personal reward for the battlers out there that just slug it out.
Yeah, but it seems these days that front rowers play 45, 50 minutes and that's just how it rolls. In some cases, 35 and pulled off in the first half, like in the World Cup.
Yeah, well, if you're not doing a good job, that happens. But
And the challenge too, when you're making those subs sometimes, is the game loses shape. And all of a sudden it can get messy, and often that's if a team's on top and they want to roll some people and give the others a game. But we want to make sure that the game still has that momentum. So, you know, you think about those players coming on, the key's fit first, and then, you know, if you can do some other stuff and add value to it. But I think sometimes the game actually disrupts the game and flow. One of the things being talked about is, do you identify set periods where that's the only time you can make substitutions, rather than it happening any time? There are fixed windows. If you're going to use them, that's when you use them. Outside of, probably to Jip's point, a head injury or a significant injury.
So it becomes like a power play.
Yeah, something like that. Right. So, and look, we've had one meeting and it was fair to say it was very mixed in the views around it.
Yeah. And obviously you've spent some time overseas, you know, doing research in American sports, in the Premier League, in different places. What are the things that you've picked up that have been added to the game recently? What are the things that you've liked in the way that they approach their high performance that maybe we didn't have in New Zealand?
Yeah, look, I'm lucky with a son in the States at college. You get good exposure, so I try and make sure when I'm over there, I always tie it in with visits. Firstly, the numbers game. You know, you think about the cohort of players we have to choose from versus what they have coming out of the collegiate system and the numbers going into there. Technology, they do really well. The challenge, I think, for them often, though, is because money's not an issue, they have massive support networks. And so the actual alignment and coordination piece is really tough. And often, you know, you get mixed messages and so on. So I think what we've done really well is identified what's really important and narrowed that down and nailed the culture piece and so on around that. But look, those things, if I look at Premier League, you know, I think about as athletes, they play so much. And in other sports, you know, I think about Don Trickers with the Padres, spent some time there as Chip has. You know, they're playing all the time. So it's actually difficult to get time to coach and so on. So, yeah, look, probably just looking at the way they use technology, ID stuff's pretty straightforward for them. Incredible athletes, like the US, the athletes there are phenomenal. So some of the stuff that they're doing in and around them, but the game is so different for what it entails. And then through the INEOS, with them coming on board as a performance partner, obviously they're with Mercedes and now Man United, the Grenadiers. So we have a collaborative piece where we get on with them quite often. But you just see the differences in the sport and what they see is really important. You know, it's all athlete focused. We're probably, you know, program and system and things around that.
Right. And so when you've been over to those places and you apply, I suppose, that we're from the little old New Zealand side of it, like, are we quite unique in the how far advanced our processes and systems are in comparison to our population base? I don't imagine there are many countries around the world with that kind of competition running with just 5 million people.
Yeah, look, what blows them away, and they all know who the All Blacks are, even if they don't really get the game. The brand is well known because of success and, you know, whether it be through legacy, James Kerr's book, or what they've seen, they've got an idea of the success of the All Blacks. I think what they really like, and you know, a lot of programs are trying to mirror that now, is the culture piece. Mm. You know, that care and connection, the off-field part, creating a performance culture so that your athletes can thrive. They know they've got the athletes, but how do you build that teamness, selflessness, team first, some of those values? And you know, our legacy is second to none, really. So they're the parts that they really want to, you know, whenever you go to talk to them, that's the stuff they want to hone in on. That's where we've probably added value to some of the conversations. Mm. Facilities wise, they're incredible. Mm. You know, when you see not just you know, the pro ranks, but college setups are phenomenal.
When I've been with those sorts of environments as well, they're obsessed with how do we get the individual to feed the collective, because, you know, there is a lot of individualism in their setup, whereas probably here we're more team focused and then find our role within it, versus there it's like, I'm an individual and how's that going to work towards the organisation. And then the other challenge I think is different for us is they've got one team. So like Major League Baseball does not have to worry about the American baseball team. Or anything they run, the six or seven leagues below is in their control, who goes where, you know, whereas here we do have to manage players through three sort of environments, sometimes four if they get a Barbarians or so forth. So that is a complex beast for us to manage here, and that alignment that Motsi spoke about is so critical, that clarity of roles and responsibilities and that streamlined alignment is crucial, so that everyone knows where they are and when they're in there, what they're providing and so forth. And I think that's one area I've noticed, because of the simplicity of their makeup, they've got very, very strong alignment because they're in charge, if that makes sense.
Mike, we'll let you go. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. Really appreciate your insights into everything you do and what New Zealand Rugby is trying to do to push it forward.
Thank you.
Nice. Cheers, Watson.
Thanks.
Now, of course, massive game this weekend. The Blues against the Canes at Eden Park. Number one, the Hurricanes. Number two, the Blues. The winner of this game could well be the team that hosts the final. So plenty on the line here in this match. In round three when they played, the Hurricanes came out on top, 29-21. They dominated kick metres. They dominated the gain line. They looked really good and have been really good in the most part, apart from that Brumbies game, since then. What do you like about them, Jipper?
What I've seen is their forwards are very, very efficient in their pod work, and it's manipulating defences throughout the whole season. And if we look at the Waratahs game and we have a quick look at this clip here, you can see the width. You've got Yossi on the inside and he's flat enough to receive that ball, so that engages the first defender. Walker Leawere is on the move. He's ready to go, so that engages the next defender. Now the width of Lomax makes two defenders have to make a choice. If we play it on now, you'll see Walker Leawere will take a slight outline and utilise the retreating player who wasn't in the D-line to pass that ball to Lomax, but the work of Yossi to get from the inside to out and play a second role is so efficient. Now they follow it up. They've got frontline ball, out carry. They thought the tip was coming, so he holds the pass, he gives the tip through the contact, try time. Now, moments later, Lomax took a carry because they'd tightened up defensively. They then went through here and focused on the back with Morby out the back, but they forgot about the front man. Nice read from Lakoa to put him through that hole, and then it's all too easy try time. It does not matter what the defence shows this Hurricanes team. They are making great decisions at the right time at the line based on what the defence is showing them. So the ability to manipulate, we've heard a lot about the Blues defence, and yes, it is very efficient. It will get a true test this weekend.
Another outstanding job at the big screen from James Parsons. Just an absolute natural. Now, the defence of the Blues is an important talking point because last time they played the Canes, they tackled at just 82%. Of course, we want a little bit more than that. You're back in the chair.
Yeah.
What are you looking for out of a tackle percentage if you're the Blues since then?
Yeah, well, I mean, that 82% has got to be put in context, and I'm not trying to look defensive, but obviously that bench scenario in the HIAs was pretty hard, putting, you know, halfbacks on wings, and they don't understand, like, they're quite crucial to the defensive system. But outside of that game, Blues have tackled around 90%, but it's also 90% with dominance. So, you know, like, if you use the Waratahs as an example, they've actually tackled close to 90%, but it's all behind the gain line. You know, so you can make your tackles, but if you're getting, allowing teams to get across the gain line, it's too hard. So the Blues are, you know, they're big bodies, they're physical, they like to bring that line speed, but also have the ability to sort of rush up and use the sideline as their friend. So they are different defensively to the Hurricanes. They're both sort of been very successful, but the Blues will need to be at that 90 or above if they're going to win this. But I think more importantly, I wouldn't mind if they dropped to 86, 87 and had more dominance, if that makes sense.
When you look at what you just showed, as far as the nature of the pod play and where the players are coming at different angles, it's quite complex the way that they're running it. If you're a defensive unit, what are you needing to do as far as your structure is concerned to make sure that that kind of attack gets nullified?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. Is not basing your width on what they're presenting you as an attacking team. Because if you go body on body and it's quite, they're trying to stretch you to, you know, get between defenders. So it's about being connected with the inside and out and having the communication of who's on who. They are a system where you've got to, some teams you can mark the front man, which is if we use what I just showed, the tip to Lomax. You can mark Lomax and get to the out the back. I don't think the Canes are that sort of side. You can't do a double job. So I think you have to mark the front line and you have to have someone outside that last sort of tip person marking the player out the back. Because that player, the Hurricanes, it doesn't matter who it is so engaged. Mm. Like, you don't know who's getting the ball. Could be inside, they could carry it, could go out the back. That's what makes them so good. So there's that. And then it's literally winning the collision and not allowing the offload, and then slowing the ball down at the breakdown so that you buy your next generation of defence. You don't need to win it, but next sort of line of defence, the time to get up and do it again. If you can't slow their ability to get across the gain line and win collisions, they're just too good. Like, they just play at such a speed that ball's on a platter, and the skill set of their forwards is just phenomenal, and they're confident.
That's probably a stupid question. Yeah. But are the Blues set up for that well?
Yep.
They
are? Yeah, because they're both physical teams. Like, at 29, 21, you know, I don't think the Hurricanes would say they had their best game, but they still won, which, you know, sometimes winning ugly is great. The Blues were hampered. They did their best, but they were never really in that race. So you'd have to think, had they not slipped up against the Brumbies, the Hurricanes would go roaring hot favourites. But there'll be a lot the Blues can take out of that Brumbies game to hopefully manipulate on their terms in front of a home crowd.
But what do you see there?
Well, I think your kick strategy is crucial. Like, that, you mentioned Ruben Love, obviously, with Mike Anthony, like, not playing into their hands, not giving them the amount of ball. The one area, because they've had a lot of changes at hooker, has really challenged their line-out. And saying that, though, the Blues have struggled line-out time as well. So the dominance in that sort of set-piece area, both scrums as well, have been going really well. It'll be interesting whoever can win that. The other challenge will be taking out their loose forwards. If they can nullify the loose forwards on both attack and defence, the Blues, that is, doesn't matter who plays in the Hurricanes, loose forwards, they're all freaks. So nullifying them, checking them, not allowing them to get over the ball, make them tackle versus allowing them to hunt, all those sorts of things are things that the Blues can control. But what I like about the Blues is, if you use the weekend, their kick strategy, they had 24% of their rucks. They didn't play their best game. 24% of their rucks in their own half. Like, just don't. You don't need to get caught in that game. They've kept their game really simple, like five clean breaks. This is not blue stats for me. Like, you're used to seeing 20. So if we compare the two teams, The Blues have got 5 clean breaks, 10 turnovers, so, you know, very basic. They're not looking to offload, they're being direct, though. And then when they get in the 22, 7 entries for 6 tries.
Yeah.
Like, they're almost like they're a muscle game, and it works for them because they're big power athletes. They get game line. Whereas you look at the Canes will give you opportunity to disrupt their attack because they are so good, because 20 clean breaks, 25 offloads, still 52% gain line. So 13 entries for 7 tries, so not as efficient, but they're in there enough. So they potentially do give you opportunities to force errors.
Roll your sleeves up. James Parsons excited on the sideline. Now, questions. We've had a few of them from you guys through the week, so please send us questions at aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. Now, our next question is from Spain, would you believe? Xavier Numea looks like the most dynamic loose head prop in the competition. That works perfectly in Super Rugby. How does the team see him for the international scene?
I definitely think he's in the picture. You can't ignore his form. International rugby is different, and he'll potentially, under Nick Gill, put on a little bit more size, with balancing, not losing all that power athlete skill set that works so well for him. But the Hurricanes scrum has been dominant, you know, like, and a cornerstone of that is the 8 working together and crediting the back 5, but that front 3 needs to provide the platform to push on. And he's been doing it for a number of years. It's not just a one-season wonder either, so... I think he'll go great at international rugby, put round the right people, and potentially you can see, you know, sometimes when people debut at All Black level, you know, you could see Xavier Numea, Safar Moore if he's fit, and a Tyrell Lomax, you know, like that does give that cohesive nature for him, you know, under that those sort of debuting conditions.
While you're talking about Tyra Lomax, we'll go to the next question. We'll give you the ball, the next question, because you've been waiting on the answer for this for a few weeks. We're just getting to it now. It ain't easy one-on-one on YouTube. We'll get in touch and we'll get a ball to you. Your question is, crazy how you praised everyone in the Hurricanes except their prop Tyra Lomax. That man has literally carried that tight 5 alongside Xavier and Puri Raketi Stones. They're outpowering every team up front, creating easy metres for their team.
Yeah, I mean, I read the question. I probably didn't labour the point, but when we were going through the Hurricane side, I said Tyrell Lomax is Tyrell Lomax. Like, he came to life last year.
Yeah.
These performances are no surprise for me. They are now an expectation, you know, for what he's done at that international game, and he's claimed that 3 All Black jersey as his own, and he's just continuing that form on. He is rock solid. There is no surprise to that. But as I said, when you become a senior All Black and you deliver time and time again at international level, that's the expectation, as you deliver upon that. And he's doing that. There's no ifs, buts or anything about it. You know, if you look at the clip I analysed, he's on the tip 1 minute and then he takes a tough carry the next. And then he nails his core roles. So. I'm sounding like an echo chamber to that guy, but that is the situation.
Yeah. But you made a good, strong point, so we appreciate you. We'll flick you out the player sport ball, and you can enjoy that, hopefully, with your kids, with your family, with your mates, whatever it might be. So let's move on from the Blues versus the Canes, and let's touch on the Brumbies quickly, because when you think about the Brumbies... Look, they've kind of been the silent assassins of this competition. Right now, they're sitting on 8 wins, 2 losses. They had a pretty poor start, and they've really made their way through. They have a run home that is really a lot lighter than the Blues and the Canes in first and second. The Brumbies have the Waratahs, the Crusaders. We wouldn't have said that in the past, but the Waratahs, the Crusaders, the Rebels, and the Force to go. They're playing the Crusaders at home in Canberra, so you'd expect them to win that game. That's a pretty light run in comparison to the Blues, who've got to play the Canes and the Chiefs as part of their last 4, and the same for the Canes playing the Blues and the Chiefs. We're living in a world where if they go and get a bunch of bonus points, the Brumbies could actually end up on top of this competition.
And they've shown at home they are a difficult beast. Like, toppling the Hurricanes the way they did was pretty impressive. And I've done some deep diving into the Brumbies, because
we didn't expect that.
I've made a few comments that it probably have fired a few Brumbies fans up, but it is a reality of where things are at. But they're very similar to the Blues statistically, and when you watch them play, if you use the game on the weekend, and let's acknowledge the Fiji and Drua are one of the more physical teams defensively and with ball in hand. So that's the biggest game that'll test you physically. As the Blues did six visits for seven, the Brumbies had six visits for four tries, so very consistent. They had 58% gain line against Fiji and Drua. That is big. That's like you're nearing 70% against other sides. They had four clean breaks, Blues had five. They had four offloads. So you can get the picture. They had 12 turnovers. They're a power game. They're not going to risk too much in terms of their attack. I feel like they've gone back to their DNA, and they're 100% line out. They had one scrum that was a bit rough, but other than that, they were very strong scrum time. So they know their attacking game. Where they've probably adjusted, and I think this could be their Achilles heel, okay, is 15 penalties, 11 of them on defence, 9 of those in the 22. So they are going to get a name for themselves, especially with refs, that they've been a little bit cynical in and around that red zone. They win a lot of breakdown turnovers, so they had 12 turnovers won, but for the amount of breakdowns they entered, they had a high penalty count as well, so it's risk versus reward there. They had another yellow card, that high yellow card stats. I'm just thinking finals footy here. But with all that said and done, the Drua, who are a very strong attacking team, had 11 visits for only 2 tries. Now, that's pretty efficient, but it's pretty cynical defence. They tackled at 84%, but again, to me, that's sort of 87, 88 against any other team, because the Drua are just a tough team to knuckle down. You're going to miss a lot of tackles. So there's a lot to like about where their game is at, but they're going to have to get that balance between cynical discipline and around that red zone, because we have seen, you know, use the World Cup as an example. I know we have the 20-minute red card or yellow cards. If you do receive a lot of yellow cards, especially early in the game, you give away a lot of penalties in that red zone, you are fighting a battle against, you know, extra numbers. And that will take its toll.
If you look at all of those games, the Waratahs, Crusaders, Rebels in force, there are zero
reasons. Especially
reason
when three are at home.
Yeah, they couldn't pick up 4 bonus points along the way there. Next thing you know, they've got 20 more points. They've got 7 points to make up on the Hurricanes at the moment, but the Hurricanes have got 2 really hard games. It's difficult to go to the Blues and to go away to the Chiefs as well. They're both away games.
So, if we look at that, and I'm thinking out loud, they need 2 with bonus points, 2 wins with bonus points, or 3 wins.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
And even then it's tight.
Even then, yeah, it's tight. Especially if they get 20 points, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you've got the Chiefs, who are sitting 4th.
Man, they look good.
They looked really good against the Force, who admittedly aren't a great side. But the Chiefs have a run home of Moana Pacifica, a win. Rebels, probably a win. Before facing the Canes and the Blues, a real acid test to find out where they're at in those last 2 weeks.
Brutal going into a quarter semi-final. That's 5 weeks. That's sort of like World Cup style.
Or a gift in that you are honed against 2 of the best teams.
Yeah, I mean, but they took a few casualties the other night. Like, if Sean Stevenson's out, I'm not sure where he's at. They'll rest a lot of guys, obviously, this week against Moana Pacifica, but But from what I saw, They are very efficient. And what I liked the most about the Chiefs the other night is we saw against the Highlanders, they got out to a big lead and they let them come back into it. And the Force have been a handy side. Like, they've beaten the Crusaders, they pushed the Highlanders, they've had a win against the Reds. So they're not a bad team. And there was opportunities where the Chiefs could have let them score. There was one example, Quinn Tapia ran back 50 metres and got a hand in the way.
Yeah.
And those sorts of effort maybe hadn't been there previously, but they wanted to protect their line so much that they got that big margin and then they found their way. They've struggled in the last 20. A lot of the games they've conceded more points than they've scored. But it's like their focus has shifted, like, we need 80 minutes. And the effort and energy from their big dogs, their All Blacks, really shone through that they've made some serious adjustments to the way that they're sort of focusing on that second 40.
Absolute success story. So let's close out the show. Of course, tipping.super.rugby. Come to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod League. If you haven't joined our league already, you've still got a chance if you join now. If you top the table, you get a spot on the show at the end of Super Rugby. So please If you aren't on it, jump into the league from all the other leagues that you're in. Hurley Gang is out front at the moment, picked all six on the weekend. I wouldn't say that I was that good. You've now jumped ahead of me. You're 94th and 95th.
That's true.
So I'm falling away.
I should have picked the Reds, but I just clearly have a soft spot for New Zealand sides.
I picked Moana Pacifica. That was the problem for me. But let's quickly go through them then. Moana Pacifica versus the Chiefs. Moana Pacifica at home at Mount Smart.
Chiefs.
Reds, Rebels.
Reds.
Blues, Canes.
I'll give an answer.
Yes.
But I have never said this for a Blues fixture. I need to see the lineups.
Yeah.
I do need it, because there are some ins and outs and who's playing where that are quite critical.
It's a Wednesday tip for you.
I've been doing my tips because I've been struggling. I've actually been putting time aside on a Thursday, Friday to actually try and make myself look half decent so I can keep coming on the show.
I wouldn't be surprised while you're over in the States if you went and visited a Las Vegas tip maker get some inside word on how to approach it.
I think it's a lot of backhanders. That's how they approach it. But I'll go Blues because of at home. For here and now, but I'm not saying, once I see where that midfield makeup is at, that's quite crucial.
I'm with you, I think Blues. Landers versus Crusaders.
Landers.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's hard to imagine. You can't go with the Crusaders just as of now. Away from home, traditionally in New Zealand lineups, if it's a 50-50 call, you have to go to the home team, and you're mostly right.
And you'd have to think, with their position on the table, no one's going to be wanting to risk two pretty key players that could play international rugby in Blackadder and Barrett. So.
Now, the Tars are hosting the Brumbies. No chance of an upset there. And the Force at home against the Drill. I had trouble with this one a little bit. I wasn't quite sure how that was going to go, because they can be a bit unpredictable on the road, the Drill.
They can, but geez, they came back against the Rumbies, put themselves within the race. The key for them will be not thinking it's just going to happen. Like, they were quite structured and measured against the Brumbies and got themselves within striking distance. So Nick White comes back into the fold, Sam Carter comes back into the fold for the Force. I think they were big outs against the Chiefs. But I will go the Drua.
Fair enough, I'm with you there too. So, there you go. That's the tipping comp. Please jump onto the tipping comp. Get involved while you still have the chance, because you can sneak in at the end of the season. And if you've already got the points and others, of course it goes into our comp as well. So, please jump onto that for a chance to come on the show at the end of Super Rugby. Send us an email, aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. Or you could even leave a comment in the YouTube comments section, which is always a colourful place to read. It's always one of the highlights of my week. So please do that as well. So thank you very much for joining us. Thanks again, Jip.
Pleasure.
It's going to be an absolute ripper this weekend. You're on the ground, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Can't wait.
Very nice, very nice. Well, I'll be there as well. I haven't been to a game as a fan all season. So I am looking forward to...
That's outstanding.
...maybe having a tipple and watching a game.
I look forward to seeing you after.
Dave, I'm sure you've got some good tickets for us. But, yes, so thank you very much for joining us once again on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. We'll catch you next week. Of course, you can catch us on Sky platforms, on Rugby Pass, Rugby Pass TV. We'll see you wherever you are. Thank you very much.